It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Old Dominion may be looking for a new direction.
This is the most important governor's election in our lifetime.
Republican Ed Gillespie could pull off an upset in the Virginia governor's race tomorrow in a commonwealth that went for Clinton last year. Gillespie never campaigned with President Trump, while the Democratic candidate Ralph Northam had help here from former President Obama.
Or if they can't hold Virginia in this kind of environment, maybe you provide sort of a roadmap for Republican candidates in those states to sort of not run away from Trump necessarily, but keep Trump at arm's length.
Gillespie, a former RNC chairman, seems to have united the establishment and so-called Bannon wing of the party. And Steve Bannon said this weekend he thinks Trump voters will send the Republican candidate to Richmond. Today, Gillespie said if he wins, he'll partner with the president who endorsed him.
Any governor of Virginia has to be able to work with the president of the United States.
The Democrat Northam has been doing his best to make President Trump a liability for Gillespie.
We watched a campaign in 2016. One that was embarrassing for this country, but it was also a campaign that was based on a lot of hatred and bigotry and discrimination and fear.
But likely voters say the most important issues to them are the economy and health care. Still, a group backing Northam, the Latino Victory Fund, tried to bring racial tensions front and center, producing an ad showing a truck with a Gillespie bumper sticker speeding menacingly towards minority children.
Dangerous illegal immigrants back on the street.
But since Gillespie ran ads calling Northam weak on gangs like MS-13, the DNC chairman sees the violent truck ad as fair.
When you hit the bully back and the bully starts crying, those are crocodile tears to me.
Ultimately, the big challenge for Gillespie is going to be convincing Republicans to vote Republican.
Our basically suburban Republican-leaning voters in Northern Virginia willing to vote for Gillespie when they weren't willing to vote for Trump last time.
All right, so that was Fox News last night. Peter Ducey talking about the race that is happening in Virginia this morning. And of course, it's also happening in New Jersey. These are unusual timings. These two states have their elections at a very different time of the year than most states, which usually have the finals in the spring. And so for you voters in Virginia, I just want to remind you that you absolutely want to vote this morning. Ed Gillespie, I have to say that I know Ed Gillespie. I knew him when I was president of Concerned Women for America. I personally like him very much. I don't think he's as conservative, as committed, let's say. To the principles that some of us, you know, that's a hill we would die on. I think it's business interests that's a hill he would die on. And yet he's running against Ralph Northam, who has been described as the most liberal Democrat nominee in Virginia history. A big fan of Obamacare, very involved with Terry McAuliffe, of course, running those ads, which were paid for by Soros money, against Ed Gillespie, accusing, you know, inferring that Ed Gillespie is a racist, driving this big truck that says, "Don't tread on me," chasing down, trying to kill immigrant children. It was pretty amazing. And so that's kind of where Virginia is. Now, Virginia has been turning blue. You can see it. I think a lot of it is because Northern Virginia, of course, is right there in the orb of Washington, D.C., and in the last 8 years of the presidency, there have been, let's just say, thousands, I don't know if I'd say millions, but tons of people descending upon that area who are far to the left. And so it has really changed the politics. Virginia used to be a very solidly red state, not anymore. So the latest polls that I have seen show that Ralph Northam, the Democrat, is 5 points above Ed Gillespie, the Republican. And the dynamic there is that conservatives have lost their enthusiasm, have not been as enthused for Ed Gillespie because he has not embraced conservative issues. But I think in the wake of the Ralph Northam ad that went way over the top, indicating that Ed Gillespie was somehow some sort of a white male terrorist trying to run down immigrant children, it was a little bit too much for people. And I think it's energized Republican voters that are more conservative and wish that there were a more conservative candidate to go out and work for Ed Gillespie. So that's kind of where that stands. And then in the attorney general's race in Virginia, you have the incumbent Mark Herring. Mark Herring was elected. He came in the Obama wave of things and immediately made his mark. He was the one who refused to enforce the same-sex marriage bill that had been passed in Virginia. It was very clear where Mark Herring stood. Remember, he barely beat Ken Cuccinelli. So, no, that's not true. That's not who he barely beat. Ken was running for governor. That was a different race. Ken is the former attorney general, but I can't remember the name of his candidate. But it was a race in which there was a lot of question about what went on in that race and what went on in Virginia. So that's Mark Herring. He's running against a guy named, ironically enough, John Adams, who is actually a descendant of John Adams. John is extremely conservative, and so that's an interesting race. And I think all of these down ballot races will, of course, depend on what happens at the top. That's the way it is in the presidential race. And so that's why some of the down-ballot candidates who are actually conservative, really conservative, are concerned that Virginia voters get out and vote today and not stay home because they might not be as passionate about their Republican candidate. Nevertheless, you have to assess all the choices, and these choices do matter. It really does matter. That Virginians go out and vote today, as this is not 2018, but this is the race in Virginia that really, really matters. So I'm encouraging all of you listening in Virginia to get out and vote today. And by the way, AFA has a great voter guide, afa.net. You can go on that and download it, enter your information. It's a really user-friendly guide and will help you to assess these candidates. The other race that we have sort of talked about, there's John McGuire, who's a former Navy SEAL. He was our guest actually telling his personal story last Friday. His opponent is Melissa Dart. She's the Democrat. McGuire is the Republican running in that race. And then, of course, there's the race being run by a delegate, Bob Marshall, against a transgender candidate, Danica Rome. Now, Danica has had hundreds of thousands of dollars poured into her, his, whatever. No surgery, so I think it's kind of still his. Into his race by transgender activists. And of course, transgender, the LGBT movement nationwide is looking to this race. They think it'll be a bellwether, and they're excited about the possibility of Danica beating Delegate Bob Marshall, who is the longest serving pro-life candidate in the Virginia House of Delegates, unapologetic on the moral issues, sponsored the same-sex marriage ban legislation in Virginia. Actually, I want to read to you, there's a letter that Delegate Bob Marshall, sent out to constituents just in the last few days. And this is what it says. It says, "Dear constituent, boys in Prince William County schools will be able to access showers, locker rooms, restrooms, and sports teams previously allowed only for girls by a 5-3 vote of the Prince William School Board on June 21st, which added sexual orientation and gender identity to all school policies affecting students, teachers, and staff. My opponent, Democratic candidate Danica Anthony Rome, who transitioned from male to female, spoke in favor of this policy before the school board 4 times. I spoke against this new policy as a parent and grandparent who believes children's privacy must be protected." He goes on to say that the General Assembly can override the school board next year. "If elected, I will vote against any effort to permit biological boys to use the girls' showers, locker rooms, or restroom facilities, and vice versa, regardless of a claim to be transgender. My transgender opponent, Danica Rome, thinks such boys should use any facility previously allowed only for girls, including sports teams, which will take scholarships away from girls." And then included in his letter, he said, "The incidence of self-harm among transgender persons is 40% plus. Almost all teens who experience gender confusion outgrow the feelings naturally. Children should not be indoctrinated by a transgender curriculum in public school. nor do I think children who are incapable of giving fully informed consent should receive risky, sterilizing operations and 10 years of hormones to switch their sexual appearance. I write out of concern for our young and innocent children. The General Assembly can prevent the transgender ideology from being taught in public school classrooms. My opponent and I clearly differ on this and other related important issues. And that's the letter from Bob Marshall. Danica Rome has been attacking Bob on issues of transportation in Virginia, which are not interesting to a national audience. But Bob, it's kind of confusing. I think personally that's kind of a smokescreen, because I think there's no question this has become a national issue and this has become a nationalized race. Because the transgender lobby wants Danica Rome to take the seat from Bob Marshall. What better coup could there be than that? By the way, I believe that district, or that whatever you call it, I think it's a district in Virginia, I think went to Hillary Clinton in the last election. So it's going to be an interesting race. And so those of you in Virginia, I just hope that you'll vote today. Really, excuse me. You can see that it's early in the morning. So you're my first guests, all of you. And my first chance to talk this morning out loud. So that's happening in Virginia. And while we're talking about that, the president is overseas. This is what he said early this morning, clip 8.
North Korea is a worldwide threat that requires worldwide action. The United States stands prepared to defend itself and its allies using the full range of our unmatched military capabilities if need be. We like to play our cards a little bit close to the vest. I will say this, that I believe it makes sense for North Korea to do the right thing. I think we're showing great strength. We hope to God we never have to use. With that being said, I really believe that it makes sense for North Korea to come to the table and to make a deal that's good for the people of North Korea and the people of the world.
It's a very crucial trip that this president is on, and he's been in Japan. He's moved to South Korea this morning. South Korea's president is not an ally of President Trump. South Korea has moved to the left a lot. In fact, there have been North Korean infiltrators, people who are sympathetic. Their school curriculum has been rewritten to soften concerns about communism and what's going on in the North. It really is amazing. It's actually kind of a mirror of some of the things we're seeing here. So he's got an uphill battle talking to Moon in South Korea. But that's where he is. They're 12 hours ahead of us, just about 12, so everything's upside down. Needless to say, in the wake of the shooting in Texas, the left is, of course, all about guns and taking away guns, and that's the issue. And I wanted you to hear what President Trump said in an exchange with an NBC reporter earlier this morning, last night for them. Let's listen. Clip 9.
You've talked about wanting to put extreme vetting on people trying to come into the United States, but I wonder if you would consider extreme vetting for people trying to buy a gun.
Well, you know, you're bringing up a situation that probably shouldn't be discussed too much right now, but it's okay if you feel that that's an appropriate question, even though we're the heart of South Korea. If you did what you're suggesting, there would have been no difference 3 days ago, and you might not have had that very brave person who happened to have a gun or a rifle in his truck go out and shoot him and hit him and neutralize him. And I can only say this, if he didn't have a gun, instead of having 26 dead, he would have had hundreds more dead.
And are you considering any kind of gun control policy going forward?
When you look at the city with the strongest gun laws in our nation is Chicago. Mm-hmm. And Chicago is a disaster. If this man didn't have a gun or a rifle, you'd be talking about a much worse situation in the great state of Texas.
Isn't it refreshing to hear plain talk? NBC reporter doesn't understand. We'll take a break. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget?
$500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand God's purpose for your life through the eyes of a layman. I've been leading people to Jesus Christ for over 40 years, and I can say without a doubt, it's the most fun I've ever had. The more we share our faith, the more we want to share our faith. But starting's the hardest part. Not because it's hard, but because you think it's hard, when it isn't. Jesus said, people will know that you're his disciple not by your knowledge, but by your love. And loving on people doesn't require any training. It only requires loving. Anyone can do it, and the results are always the same. Relationships are built, people begin to invite you into their lives, and conversations about God follow naturally. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everyone every day closer to Jesus. For help doing that, go to ROTW.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today. Kellogg's, the cereal company, is apologizing for what some people perceive to be a racist cartoon. The artwork appears on a box of Corn Pops. All the Corn Pops were the same shade of yellow except for one, the janitor. And the janitor was the darkest Corn Pop. Faster than you could say snap, crackle, pop, somebody was raising Cain on social media, accusing Corn Pops of racism. Kellogg's apologized, said they did not intend to offend. They reaffirmed their commitment to diversity and inclusion. They respect Corn Pops of all persuasions. Folks, this country's gone plumb nuts. The very fact a major American company was forced to apologize for a Corn Pop demonstrates just how perpetually offended and sensitive we've become. It's political correctness in a cereal bowl. And it's only a matter of time before somebody complains about Cocoa Puffs or Fruity Pebbles. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're hearing more about the gunman's past and the fact that in 2012 he was convicted of domestic violence against his then wife and also for cracking the skull of his infant stepson. And he spent a year in military jail in Southern California. The Air Force now opening up an investigation as to why that information was not passed along to the FBI. We do know he bought four weapons after he was discharged from the Air Force, one a year in 2014, 15, 16, and 17. Some of those weapons were, of course, used here. We also are hearing about the two heroes. We heard about Johnny Langeford yesterday. He was the driver of the truck that was basically pulled over by a man or stopped by a man named Stephen Williford, who lived across the street from the church. His daughter said she heard gunfire at the church. He grabbed his rifle barefoot, ran out, and engaged the shooter. He says he's no hero.
I'm no hero. I am not. I think my God, my Lord, protected me and gave me the skills to do what needed to be done. And I just wish I could have gotten there faster.
Williford says he knew a lot of people in that church, as do many in this little town. And in that church, of course, most people were related to each other in a lot of cases. About 60 people were there. 26 are dead. The memorials continue as there are still people in the hospital, including two children at University Medical Center, fighting for their lives at this hour. We have heard also from the pastor and his wife of the church. They were not there on Sunday. They were out of town, but their teenage daughter was in the church and was killed. This from the pastor's wife.
Now most of our church family is gone. Our building is probably beyond repair. And the few of us that are left behind lost tragically yesterday.
And one more story for you guys. Joanne Ward, one of the victims, is being called a hero. She was killed inside this church along with two of her children. She has four children. A third one is in the hospital, shot four times. She shielded her children from the shooter.
All right, that was Adam Housley on Fox and Friends this morning. I just thought you needed to hear that. That's the first I've heard from the gentleman that ran out, you heard it, barefoot with his gun, and he was described earlier as a crack shot. He was able to shoot between the body armor and actually hit he hit the murderer twice, once in the leg and once in between the armor and the abdomen. And, of course, when the killer was found, the guy, barefoot guy, gave chase with the other guy that we mentioned, Johnny something. They gave chase and would not let go. I mean, he had already gotten a head start on them, and they drove like 90 miles an hour trying to catch up with him, and finally saw him go around a curb and then go off, and then he was dead. And the report yesterday was that this neighbor whose voice you just heard, who sounded so shaken up, I'm guessing pretty shaken up by all of that, stood guard and made sure that there was a hostage in the car who we haven't heard anything about yet. Made sure the hostage was safe before he did anything. They didn't know that the killer was dead yet. So anyway, it's just a really interesting story, and you can hear the emotion in his voice. You can hear the emotion in the other kid, Johnny's voice. This is not a small thing, you know, to take the life of anyone, even if they have just killed your friends, because life is sacred. And I think people certainly Christians understand that inherently, that life is sacred. And yet there's all this call for, of course, banning guns. And if guns had been banned, there would be so many more dead. And President Trump made the quintessential point. Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the nation. And I just read this morning that I think it's 400 shootings already this year. It's just out of control, because the criminals have guns and the good people don't. And so, but I digress. There's another thing going on with this. This is really interesting. This is a commentary by a young man named Jeremy Hunt for Fox News. And he says this: Americans from all walks of life seem to always find a way to join hands in the face of adversity. In fact, it's one of the most beautiful aspects of the American spirit. But with every new national tragedy, it seems that unifying spirit is a little weaker than before. He said that as well-intentioned Americans pray for their countrymen who were just gunned down while worshiping God, gun control advocates are bashing them for their expression of faith. Here are just a few examples from my Twitter feed. This is from Representative Pramila Jayapal. I don't know where he's from. They were praying when it happened. They don't need our prayers. They need us to address gun violence, crisis, and pass sensible regulation. From John Pavlovitz: if you pray for victims of gun violence while doing nothing else, your prayers may as well be bullets for the next mass shooting. Paula Poundstone, the comedian. Ha ha ha. President Trump and Vice President Pence, if prayers were the answer to gun violence, wouldn't people at the church service be safe? Please make gun laws. Keith Olbermann: Speaker Ryan, bluntly, shove your prayers up your blank and do something about with your life besides platitudes and power grabs. Star Trek actor Will Wheaton: the murdered victims were in church. If prayers did anything, they'd still be alive, you worthless sack of blank. And on it goes. So this is the response. This is what much of America has become. And I think this is the place in which the shooter was nurtured. This mindset of hating Christians, hating faith. And by the way, Antifa was planning all of this violence starting over the weekend on November 4th, as I said to you. I don't know what's happened to that. I still find it hard to believe, to be honest with you, given the shooter was dressed in all black and had a grotesque white mask on, that there's not some connection. That's just what I think, but no one's made that public yet. They're being very quiet again about what's going on with him. But 20 cities were supposed to be the object of attacks. This is what they say. Let me share their words with you. Refuse Race Fascism is one of the sponsors. Their poster asks Atlanta demonstrators to bring pots and pans with an image of a pole poked through Trump's severed head, drawn as a pig's, with flies buzzing around it. The Revolutionary Communist website says, this nightmare must end, where you may face persecution or even death. Andy Z, who is a member of the advisory board of Refuse Fascism, has written this. V called for a ferocious struggle because normal forms of petitions do not apply with Trump. Also, there's a pamphlet Z cites called The Coming Civil War by Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, an architect of the new synthesis of communism, to point out why the group demands the whole regime must go. They call Pence the leader of Christian fascism, and they say that fascism wrapped in the Bible, taken literally, and the American flag saturated with racism, misogyny, and xenophobia. And then it goes on and on. I mean, this is what Antifa is about, and I don't expect, just because they didn't make their November 4th deadline. We just saw yesterday that a shooter went to Washington intending to kill all white policemen, and they apprehended him, I think, yesterday afternoon. The violence is just amazing to me, and so people must be vigilant. That means you vigilant, and that means you and me. All right, I want to turn to the intrigue of Washington, because I've kind of skipped it for a few days. There are several things I want to share with you. I told you yesterday that it's being reported that Mueller is getting close to indicting Lieutenant General Flynn and his son. And the alleged crime is that they failed to register as foreign representatives of a foreign power. Now, my understanding is that they actually did that late, just like Tony Podesta did that late, too. Tony Podesta is involved. This is very confusing, I realize. Paul Manafort was indicted Monday. Remember that? Boy, last Monday. Things move so fast. He and one other person who worked with him. And one of their alleged crimes is that they didn't register as the representatives of a foreign agent. But now here's an interesting article by Richard Pollack. I think it's the Daily Caller. Tony Podesta's, remember, this is John Podesta's brother. They're very close. John Podesta was the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton. He runs Center for American Progress, which I've described as the think tank for the far left. It was his email, John Podesta's, that were uncovered by WikiLeaks that had so much damning information in it. So I digress. So this is Tony Podesta. His lobbying firm, the Podesta Group, represented the Russian-owned company Uranium One during former President Barack Obama's administration and did not register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. This is the Daily Caller. Do you catch that? So during President Obama's administration, when 20% of our uranium was sold to Russia with the help of the Clintons, with the covering of the FBI that was running an investigation, had already brought charges against Russians infiltrating our uranium industry. Somehow, I remember that Andrew McCabe, the FBI agent, was involved in this. Remember that the guy that Rod Rosenstein, who's running justice now, running the so-called Russia investigation, his signature is all over the documents. They knew full well that the Clintons were working with the Russians, that something nefarious was happening, that people were indicted, and Bob Mueller knew about it, and so did James Comey. But I digress. But now we find out that Tony Podesta is up to his ears in this. His firm actually represented Uranium One, which was the company that ended up taking 20% of our uranium. Podesta collected lobbying fees of $180,000 from Uranium One, according to the nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics that discloses lobbying documents filed with Congress. The uranium company states on its website it is a wholly owned subsidiary of Rusano, the Russian state corporation for nuclear energy. All right, so somehow it's terrible, it's a crime for Lieutenant General Flynn not to register about early enough about his ties with Turkey. And it's a crime for Manafort to do the same thing in regard to Ukraine. Not so much when Podestas are actually working with the Russians to sell 20%, to buy 20% of America's uranium stockpile. Do you see any indictments for the Podesta brothers? Anybody? Tony Podesta? No, I don't think so. And so there'll be more of this. And I want to also mention to you something I wanted to emphasize earlier this week. I know there's been a lot of discussion about Attorney General Sessions recusing himself over Russia. I wasn't happy about that. Still not. But then the further speculation was that he also recused himself, according to a congressman in a meeting with him a couple of weeks ago, from any investigation into Uranium One. And I just want to set the record straight on that. I know for a fact that that's not true. I don't know what the Attorney General is doing in regard to this Uranium One investigation, which obviously is going to involve Tony Podesta's lobbying firm that represented them. But I can tell you that Attorney General Sessions has not recused himself from that investigation. And that's all I can tell you. So that's important information because you're hearing the opposite reported. And now there's another article. Judicial Watch came out with this. I just think this is amazing. Let's see. There was another article about this that made it a little clearer, but I'll go with this one. New documents show that FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe did not recuse himself from the Clinton email scandal until 1 week before the presidential election. All right, let me read it to you. FBI Director Deputy Director Andrew McCabe did not recuse himself from the investigation into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's unsecure non-government email server until Tuesday, November the 1st, 2016, 1 week prior to the presidential election. The Clinton email probe was codenamed Mid-Year Exam. Now, remember, the FBI has now turned over lots of documents that they've been withholding. And so that's why there's this new information. While working as assistant director in charge of the Washington field office, McCabe controlled resources supporting the investigation into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's email scandal. An October 2016 internal FBI memorandum labeled Overview of Deputy Director McCabe's Recusal Related to Dr. McCabe's Campaign for Political Office details talking points about McCabe's various potential conflicts of interest, including the FBI's investigation of Clinton's illicit server, which officially began in July of 2015. Let me just make this simple. Let me repeat that his wife, Jill McCabe, was given $700,000 by Terry McAuliffe, a Clinton operative, to run in a race in Virginia, I believe. And so this is interesting. The overview that Judicial Watch has uncovered also shows, if asked whether McCabe played any role in his wife's campaign, the scripted response was no. Then Assistant Director McCabe played no role, attended no events, and did not participate in fundraising or support of any kind. And yet I've told you just the opposite. It's documented in this piece right here that McCabe actually went to a meeting with McAuliffe with his wife. It was during that meeting that the money, the $700,000, was promised. There are documents. There are notes of that meeting. There are pictures online of him wearing a T-shirt supporting his wife's campaign. There's pictures of their daughter with an FBI shirt campaigning for her. There is enough evidence to signal that Andrew McCabe actually did use his position, it seems, and his placement in the government as a way of helping his wife win this race. She didn't win it, by the way, and did not disclose the $700,000 that she received. Now, he claims that's all right, but I'm telling you, that's not all right. FBI agents have to disclose everything about their spouse's income, what kind of money comes in. They have to sign an affidavit or some sort of a signed, warranted, their signature, guaranteeing that what they say is true. And so now we know that McCabe actually oversaw his own, the way they set this up, is that Andrew McCabe allegedly recused himself 1 week before the election. He actually did oversee the email scandal, and yet he was so deeply tied. You know, think about just what I said a few minutes ago about the fact that McCabe was the agent overseeing the FBI investigation of the links between the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, and the sale of our uranium. And yet we never heard about that. And then suddenly McCabe ends up being the person charged with investigating the Trump administration and their so-called collusion with the Russians. And we know that he is the one charged before that with investigating Mrs. Clinton's email. And then he doesn't recuse himself, although he boasts that he recused himself. It was 1 week before the election. It's really dirty. It is just dirty. We'll put this article from Judicial Watch on our Facebook page so that you can read it, because it's complicated. And then I want to share one last thing with you before we take our break here. A Comey memo now has been released that shows that James Comey wrote the words grossly negligent to describe Hillary Clinton's handling of classified information. You may remember that it was later changed to extreme carelessness. Now we know that grossly negligent is a legal term, and she could have been charged criminally or charged and punished for what she did, but they changed the term to extreme carelessness. Who advised him to do that? Well, it seems like the altered statement came at the direction of Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, General Counsel James Baker, and Chief of Staff Jim Rybicki. So and this is an article by John Solomon, and we'll post that on our Facebook page, too, where you can read more about it. A special guest coming up next, a change of pace, something positive that we can do. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The Cato Institute released a new poll that shows 71% of Americans believe that political correctness has silenced important discussions our society needs to have. Democrats are unique, according to the poll, in that 53% do not feel they need to self-censor. 73% of Republicans, however, and 58% of independents say they keep some political beliefs to themselves. Of those who self-censor, do you think they refrain from sharing political views or biblical ones?
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Janet Mefford.
We must tell this world that there is a God, that He did create all that is. He came to die for you and for me and for all who would believe and put their trust in Him, that His death on the cross was sufficient to pay the price for sin, and that He conquered sin and death on the third day when He rose from the dead. And He will come back to judge the quick and the dead. That's the part that's still the yet to come. He's coming back. Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
David Butts of Harvest Prayer Ministries challenges us to see prayer as a gracious gift from God.
Show us, Lord, how to pray with greater effectiveness. Lord, help us to understand more of Your heart in our city, in our churches, in our nation, literally around the globe.
The Gift of Prayer is a powerful new DVD that teaches us the importance of prayer. It's a great resource for your church or family. Available for purchase or download from the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
I tend to live in the future, and by the time tomorrow becomes today, it's past history to me.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
1 month, 3 months, 6 months from now seem as real as today. In reality, we only have today as a true reality. James from the Bible and the Message Bible reminds me, now you don't know the first thing about tomorrow. You're nothing but a wisp of fog, catching a brief bit of sun before disappearing. I wrote in my journal, am I living in such a way that I'm expectantly capturing all the wonderful opportunities that Jesus brings along today? Let's capture the right now moments that Jesus gives to us. They give us immediate hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There are few more important government jobs at the moment than the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. That agency is on the front lines of everything from securing the nation's borders and enforcing its immigration laws to identifying and countering threats to its airways, ports, waterways, and communities from enemies foreign and domestic. Tomorrow, a Senate committee will consider Mr. Trump's nomination of Kirstjen Nielsen to fill that job. She has been recommended for the post by the man who was arguably the most capable individual ever to serve as DHS Secretary, General John Kelly, now the White House Chief of Staff. It is imperative, however, that senators evaluate rigorously Ms. Nielsen's qualifications, judgment, and vision to establish whether she is, in fact, the right person at a moment when we simply cannot afford anything less. More on that tomorrow. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know what always occurs to you when these tragedies happen, and they're happening all too often, how blessed so many of us are. We don't know for how much longer. We don't know how much longer we'll escape being the object or the victim of some evil, wicked perpetration. Or, you know, we don't know what the future holds. We don't know if tomorrow something will completely change. And so each day we walk by faith and we walk in gratitude for the blessings of peace. And while we're at peace, you and I, and while we're in safety, we need to reach out and help other people. And of course, Christmas is coming up, and in whatever way you can fill in the blanks to do that, it would be a good thing. I challenging myself as I say that to you, to do something tangible to help so many people that are hurting right now. And by the way, a couple of things for Christmas. We are offering a free wristband to you, those of you listening to me. It says Keep Christ in Christmas. It's a wristband. It's no rubber or latex, for those of you that are concerned. But of course, Keep Christ in Christmas is not a small thing. It's something we're fighting for because you know why. Our culture must have a strong injection, the message of Christ. And even though that's simple on a little wristband, it's a great way of doing it. It's afa.net. Go to afa.net and you can it'll tell you how you can get your free wristband and also how to order more if you so choose. Also, we are working with Samaritan's Purse to send shoeboxes to these kids in very difficult places around the globe. And heaven knows there are plenty of them. And so National Collection Week is coming up. That's November 13th through the 20th. So you need to get your shoebox and get it filled and get it off. And if you'd like to join us with that, it's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. And last, certainly but not least, is something kind of dear to my heart. And that is an effort that we are making to encourage the persecuted people of North Korea. Arguably the most intense persecution on the globe takes place in North Korea. And so we are encouraging you to write letters to North Korean Christians. Well, they can't get them, so how does this work? Well, I'm going to introduce a guest, and he's going to tell us about exactly what this is all about. Tom Doyle is the author of Standing in the Fire, which is a beautiful book, beautiful, powerful book about the persecution of Christians worldwide. Tom says that persecuted believers have become the new face of genuine Christianity. He's also written books like Dreams and Visions, Is Jesus Awakening in the Muslim World, and Killing Christians, Living the Faith Where It Is Not Safe to Believe. Tom, I haven't read those books, but I absolutely love the titles. And thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, Sandy, great to be with you. I'm a big fan. Sure appreciate your program.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. You know, Tom, when I was, I've been to North Korea. And that's a long story that I don't want to get sidetracked with, but I was the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. And during that time, that was about 13 years ago. During that time, North Korea was inarguably the most difficult place of persecution for Christians. Would you, is that still the case, do you think?
It still is. 14 years in a row, the worst place on the planet for Christians to live is in North Korea. And we're estimating 100,000 believers now in the underground church, Sandy, but 30,000 of them are in prison. So can you imagine in the U.S. if about one-third of the body of Christ was in prison for their faith? Now, that would be a different church, but that's the reality on the ground in North Korea.
And we have to also say, Tom, that it's not just prison. When we think of prison, we think of our prisons. We're talking about concentration camps. We're talking about places where torture takes place and the worst kind of treatment, starvation, imaginable. A lot of people never survive those camps. Well, you know what? We could think of this young American student that just came back as an example of what happens to people that go to Korean camps.
Yes, yes. Oh, absolutely. And we were there in Korea when Otto was released, and we talked to some of the believers that had defected to South Korea, and they thought that it was probably some type of water torture where they put you, if you're, you know, 6 feet tall, they put you in water that's 6 foot five, and you have to keep jumping up to get air, and finally you pass out and there's brain damage. They said that's just one of the things that they've done on us. So that was their guess. It's horrific what they do to people.
You know, Tom, I remember one of the stories, one of the many stories I heard when I was there, that when they choose guards for these prisons, they actually test them. They find their guards by doing things like they would be in a public place where there would be a body of water, and they would order a prospective candidate for being a guard in one of their prison camps to take, see that mother over there with the baby? Go grab that baby and drown it right now. And those were the kinds of things they were doing to check the mettle, so-called, of the guards, the potential guards. It's a cruel, cruel place. And I would say, wouldn't you agree that it's been a discouraging time for North Korean believers because there's been so little action on their behalf?
Oh, yes. Collectively, they've really been ignored, I think, almost like what's happening out of Africa. So much of what we see in persecution is the Middle East because of Islam, but we haven't heard a lot about North Korea. But the good thing, Sandy, in the midst of this, we know over 2,000 years as the church, when there is persecution, it's always Satan's backlash because of harvest. People are coming to faith in North Korea. Satan doesn't like it. He's persecuting the church. But that doesn't stop us. That actually accelerates the growth. And so even in the darkness, there's good news coming out of North Korea.
I know that there is, the North Korea Freedom Coalition actually worked on this, Tom, and that was getting radios, mm-hmm. like little radios dropped into North Korea.
Yes.
That was one of the things that we did with some legislation. I have not been involved in a long time, so I want to make clear, I'm not an expert now, except that I understand that there's been a real powerful development of English, Korean language broadcasting into North Koreans through these radio devices.
Yes.
And so tell us about this Orange Letter campaign and how in the world you and I could actually get some kind of message to North Korean Christians.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're blessed because for 2 years now, this is our third year, we've worked with American Family Radio. And so we hand-delivered letters to the martyrs' wives in Egypt, the martyrs of the men that were killed on the beach in Libya by ISIS. We did that 2 years ago. Last year, Syrian leaders brought 110 out of the country of Syria, and we met with them and delivered letters. This year, North Korean. And so what we're doing is we're going to hand-deliver them to North Korean defectors that have become believers and are studying for ministry. And by the way, Sandy, one of them recently is a North Korean soldier that found a Bible in North Korea, started to read it, and defected and made it across the DMZ. And you've been there. You know what that's like. That's almost impossible. But he made it, and he's training for ministry now. He loves Jesus. So we're going to be delivering to North Korean defectors, but also we're going to be going on the radio with Voice of the Martyrs Korea and reading letters into North Korea to tell them that the believers in the West haven't forgotten about them. They love them, and they pray for them daily. So can you imagine feeling so alone and isolated, but yet they're going to hear on those radios that you talked about that the body of Christ stands with them and is praying for them daily.
Okay, so that's what our listeners can do. Let me get practical just for a second. If you would like to write a letter, and the idea is just to, it doesn't, not a long oration, but a way, a scripture verse, something that God lays on your heart to share with them. You can join this campaign. It's called the Orange Letter Campaign by going to engagemagazine.net, engagemagazine.net, and there you'll get your marching orders about how to submit your letter. And then heaven only knows what the fruit of that is going to be. Tom, do you have any idea of the other campaigns you've done, whether it's those men that were killed in the orange jumpsuits, beheaded, like we all, it's amazing, and the picture is still, I'm sure, in many of our heads. Do you have any idea of the effect of those letters?
Well, you know, just delivering them personally, we've been there both times, and we will on this next campaign, too, to the Koreans, just to see their faces, to know that believers love them. Sandy, it was touching. We had everything when we went to the Egyptian widows from rest homes, believers in rest homes writing them. A kindergarten class in a Christian school, they don't know how to write, so they drew pictures and sent them. They wanted them to have them. And so the Egyptian widows and their children just poured over the letters. We had a lot of them translated into Arabic, and it was just so touching. They cried. They just cried that people loved them that much to take time to write to them. And so that's how it's going to be for the North Koreans, too. They're going to be over-the-top blessed and encouraged in their faith. And this is going to be the future of the church in North Korea, because they're getting trained. They want to somehow go back. They want to affect North Korea with the gospel. So this will be just like a vitamin B12 shot in the arm for them spiritually. So we're honored to work with American Family Radio and be a part of this with Voice of the Martyrs Korea, too.
Let me give the address again. It's engagemagazine.net, engagemagazine.net. You know, Tom, I think, too, in order to kind of drive this home, when you are in North Korea, it's not anything like it is. Even in China, I think there were more gatherings of people in the underground church. My understanding is that because the restrictions are so great and the danger so great, North Korean Christians are really isolated. I'm sure they often don't dare speak of their faith to anyone.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine, if any of us can imagine that, you know what strength we get from each other, from corporate worship, from sharing our faith, from praying together, from, you know, they are really isolated. And so that's why a campaign like this can be so wonderfully powerful. To hear encouragement, it's just God sent. And so if you want to be honestly used by God in this way, and I know probably you get a lot of letters now, Tom, because I know my audience, but it's engagemagazine.net, engagemagazine.net. And you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, if Satan can't stop people from coming to Christ, he's going to try to stop them from growing. And growing in Christ, one of the essentials is to meet together, worship and fellowship. And we write about this in the new book, Standing in the Fire, about the believers that were right in the middle of ISIS in Syria and Iraq, and the great lengths that they would go to meet and pray and worship together in the middle of the night. In North Korea, it's tougher. Even just going to the next village, you have to have a visa. If someone escapes and is caught and brought back, the first question they ask them, have you seen this book? And they show them a Bible. Even if they've seen it and answer yes, it's a life sentence. So the clamp down there is just much greater than even what we've seen in the Middle East. So the enemy is trying to keep them from fellowshipping with believers. But can you imagine over the radio hearing letters of love and scripture and encouragement that we're with you, we're standing with you? Because Paul says, boy, if one of us suffers, we all suffer. So we want to stand with our persecuted brothers and sisters, especially in North Korea.
EngageMagazine.net, EngageMagazine.net. That's where you go to figure out how to write that letter and send it. Tom, we only have a couple of minutes left, but because of your work with persecuted Christians, I mean, it's an overused phrase sometimes, but do you ever wonder what you're going to do if that moment comes for you?
Well, you know what? Here's something that we know from the Middle East, our leaders. When a Muslim is perhaps ready to receive Jesus, they will ask them two questions. Number one, are you willing to be persecuted for Jesus? Because it's probably going to happen, probably your own family. Secondly, are you willing to die for Jesus? Willing to be persecuted, willing to die. Sandy, these questions are asked before they accept Christ as their Savior.
Wow.
And so those are kind of the diagnostic questions we ask ourselves every day now. We've learned that from the persecuted church. Lord, am I willing to suffer for you? Am I willing to die for you?
Tom,
pray that my answers would be yes to both.
Yes, absolutely. Amen and amen. The author, Standing in the Fire, Tom Doyle. And also, you can send your letter through engagemagazine.net. This has been Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.